Good morning. President Obama has made nuclear proliferation a major theme of conversation at the UN this week. Here's Obama speaking yesterday morning at the UN General Assembly.
For decades, we averted disaster, even under the shadow of a superpower standoff. But today, the threat of proliferation is growing in scope and complexity. If we fail to act, we will invite nuclear arms races in every region and the prospect of wars and acts of terror on a scale that we can hardly imagine.
Very dire language from the president. He did, though, make some progress on a couple key issues. He got a concession from Russia to consider tough new sanctions against Iran. That's a biggie. And also secured support from Moscow and Beijing for a Security Council resolution to curb nuclear weapons. That's a pretty big deal as well. Nuclear proliferation remains on the agenda today. President Obama is going to make a little bit of history. He's going to chair a UN Security Council meeting on disarmament. This is the first time a U.S. president has chaired a Security Council summit since it was established in 1946. I'm here now with Hans Blix. He was the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency from 1981 to 1987. And Mr. Blix led the UN committee that was eventually charged with finding weapons of mass destruction, or at least looking for them, in Iraq. We're also joined by Joe Cerincione. He's president of the Anti-Nuclear Plowshares Fund and wrote the book Bomb Scare, The History and Future of Nuclear Weapons. So, Mr. Blix, let's talk a little bit about this new focus at the United Nations on nuclear arms. Why are we suddenly hearing about nuclear weaponry again? Is it just because of North Korea and Iran?
Yeah, that's part of the explanation, but it's also a realization that the Cold War is over since a good long time, and that it's absurd to spend $1,400 billion a year around the world on arms at the present time. Iran and North Korea are the acute matters, but we are unlikely to come to grips with that problem unless also the P5, who have the 25,000 nuclear weapons today, unless they begin to disarm.
Well, he did make a couple little steps towards progress. How big a deal is it to get Russia to say that they'll consider sanctions against Iran and for Moscow and China to support a resolution to curb nuclear weapons?
Well, on the Iranian issue, I think that the focus in the Western world has been perhaps too much on the sanctions. It's always on the whip and not so much on the carrots. But if you want to get a country to act in a particular direction, then the carrots are as important. And it's instructive to compare the attitude that's taken to North Korea on the one hand and Iran on the other. In the case of North Korea, they are offered diplomatic relations both with the U.S. and Japan if they scrap their nuclear program. They also offered security guarantees. None of these elements have been so far been raised publicly as regards to Iran. So I think that one should focus equally upon the carrots that can be given to Iran, not just the whips.
What do you think the global mission is, Hans Blix, on stopping nuclear proliferation? You spoke that since the Cold War ended, that the numbers of nuclear weapons have actually declined, and that's progress. Of course, that's actions that really were taken by the Russians and the Americans, you know, on their own. But nevertheless, we've also got nuclear nations like Israel and Pakistan that are very, very controversial. Does the stopping of nuclear proliferation constitute merely a freeze at this point now? Everyone who's got them, you got them, and no additional nations? Or does there have to be some sort of rollback and relinquishing of nuclear weapons, more on the scale of what the superpowers have done, for this to really stick?
Well, the basic bargain was made in 1968 and with the non-proliferation concluded. And the gist of that was that the non-nuclear weapons states should stay away from them and that the nuclear weapons states should go away from them. But then we had the Cold War over all this period, and the numbers grew to 55,000. Then the Cold War is over, and it's time then to reduce, which the superpowers have done, and they've gone down considerably. But they've done away with the redundancy. And, of course, what we now want is to get down to zero, which will take a long time, many, many years. And Obama said he didn't think it would happen in his lifetime. But we have to start somewhere, and that is, I think, what Obama has done very well.
So, Joe Cerincione, you're the president of the Plowshares Fund, which is an anti-nuclear group. You were also an informal advisor to the president during his campaign, correct?
Correct. That's right.
So what can you tell us about President Obama's nuclear policy and how that was developed? What is he hoping to accomplish on the nuclear arms race?
President Obama sees this as one of the great threats to human life on the planet. He has a personal interest in this. He took it on as a cause, as a young man, and then as a senator reaching out to Republicans, Richard Lugar and Chuck Hagel, who were experts on these issues in the Senate. He always saw that you needed to have a bipartisan consensus on this. He thinks of nuclear weapons as one of the two great planetary threats, along with global warming, that can cause catastrophes on a planetary scale. So he's the one who keeps bringing this up, and you heard him just yesterday at the UN talk about his four pillars, and the very first pillar for security that he mentioned was nuclear proliferation and disarmament. He sees these as two sides of the same coin. You have to get disarmament, that is, reductions in the existing nuclear stockpiles, in order to get the international security. You need to stop the spread of these weapons. You need to stop the spread of these weapons in order to get the security that you need to convince people to continue to disarm. He's pushing on both sides of that coin, and I think he's got exactly the right policy.
Joe, I hate to be contentious here, but I'm just wondering how much that differs from policies in the past. There's been every president, even during the Cold War, has argued against nuclear proliferation. I mean, the superpowers, principally the United States, led us into this deal with the nuclear devil that Hans Blix talked about just a moment ago. It seems to me the superpowers are going to have to lead us out. That calls for unilateral action, for Obama saying, get rid of nukes altogether. America's going to begin. That's not likely, is it?
Well, you're absolutely right. Every president since Truman has called for the elimination of these weapons, including Ronald Reagan, who wanted to make them impotent and obsolete. What's different is that Obama is calling for this vision and coupling it with a concrete program of how to get started step by step. And he's not doing it unilaterally. He's doing it with the Russians. He says, we have to start. The United States and Russia own 96% of all the weapons in the world. So the U.S. has about 10,000, Russia has about 12,000. We have to take the first steps. He's right about that, and he's acting on it. We have one treaty underway with the Russians. The plan is to quickly go to another treaty that might get us down to, say, 1,000 weapons each.
Okay, but the complicator here, Hans, is that we have these very difficult situations with Iran and North Korea. And Ahmadinejad was at the United Nations yesterday. He said it's not possible to humiliate nations and impose double standards on the world community. It's necessary to delegitimize and reject any approach that views the realization of the interests of certain powers as the only measurement of democracy. So clearly, he is not accepting either anything coming out of Washington or out of Moscow or from the United Nations as dictating to him whether or not he can develop nuclear weapons.
Well, in negotiations, you don't really take no for an answer. I mean, before most negotiations, it's normal that the sides take very stiff positions. And the Western side has taken a very stiff position against Iran and said that, look, we will sit down and talk to you, but first you must freeze, you must suspend your enrichment program. I think Obama has been very wise in saying that, no, we are ready to meet, we are ready to listen to you, and unless they sit down together, I don't think they can prod each other and see really what could be a joint solution. The Iranians say that, no, there is no way we'll talk about enrichment, and the USA will talk about the enrichment. So I think let them meet, and they will meet. And I think the situation is therefore more hopeful now than it was a couple of months ago.
So what does President Obama need to say at the Security Council meeting that he's chairing today to reach countries like Iran or North Korea?
I would say he needs to have incentives and pressures, have that balance. And that's what he's embodied in the UN Security Council resolution that you're going to pass. What you're seeing is Obama step by step start to institutionalize his anti-nuclear vision, his view of how you go step by step with the other countries to both reduce the nuclear arsenals and increase the barriers to other countries and secure material so that terrorists can't get a single nuclear weapon, can't get an ounce of nuclear material. He has a very concrete and strong plan for how to do this. He's been remarkably successful in the few 9 months that he's been in office. I don't think any president has made this much progress in this short a time.
So, Hans, last word from you briefly. Are we going to see some serious progress in the months ahead?
Well, I hope so. At any rate, I think they put themselves in a position where they can discuss it. And certainly I would disagree with anyone who says that diplomacy is exhausted. No, I think diplomacy is really beginning now.
Okay, Hans Blix served as the Director General of the IAEA from 1981 to 1997. He was also tapped to lead the UN committee that was eventually charged with searching for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He joined us from Sweden. We also heard from Joe Cirincione. He's president of the Anti-Nuclear Plowshares Fund and wrote the book Bomb Scare, The History and Future of Nuclear Weapons. He was an informal advisor to Obama during the president's campaign.
A lot of optimism there.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.